Get ready for all the craziness of small business. It's exactly that craziness that makes it exciting and totally unbelievable. Small Business Radio is now on the air with your host, Barry Moltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show. Remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now outrageously show number 512. This show is sponsored by Nextiva, the all-in-one communication solution for small business. Well, first up, I've always been fascinated by Reddit, and I have to admit, it's a site that I've actually never used. But it's an enterprise who my next guest says is an army of obsessed users that have been credited with everything from solving a cold case of crimes, spurring tens of millions of dollars in charitable donations, to seeding the alt-right fury and landing Donald Trump in the White House. Christine Ligorio-Chafkin is an award-winning journalist who has covered culture, emerging technologies, and entrepreneurship for the past 15 years. She's a senior writer at Inc. magazine, and her work has appeared in many publications, including the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Washington Post. She was raised on a sheep farm in rural Wisconsin and now lives in New York City with her husband, cats, and toddlers. She's got a great new book out. It's called We Are the Nerds, The Birth and Tumultuous Life of Reddit, the Internet's Cultural Laboratory. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, the first thing I got to ask you, because your introduction begs this, how do you move from a sheep farm in rural Wisconsin to New York City?
Well, you know, I studied at University of Wisconsin. I was studying journalism and poli-sci and English literature. And, you know, I moved to D.C. for a couple internships, and one of them was covering Congress. And I just really quickly got a little sick of only being surrounded by lawyers and lobbyists and politicians. So moved to New York City, got an internship with the great late Wayne Barrett at the Village Voice. Mm. And my career sort of went from there.
Wow. Well, real different than living with sheep.
Sometimes, you know.
But sometimes it's not. So let's talk about Reddit, because to me, this is really a fascinating book, because Reddit has over 330 monthly users, and some people estimate that it is used by one-third of all Americans, yet a lot of people have no idea what it actually is.
Yeah, yourself included, maybe.
Absolutely. No, I've been on the site once or twice. I just don't use it. Yeah. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, well, you know who does use it is people who have any sort of really niche hobby or diehard interest. You know, if you're really into a sports team, there is a great big forum on Reddit for you and your like-minded folks. Anyone who's super passionate about politics or DIY, home improvement, photography, movies, video games, I mean, these are some of the 140,000 different communities on Reddit. I mean, and it's everything under the sun. There's one called Craft Exchange for, you know, crafters who want to exchange their wares. There's life pro tips. There's just, you know, there's one of my favorites is called Malicious Compliance, and it's tales of like corporate rules that defeat themselves or that have no purpose, and it's just great. It's sort of now it's become sort of the last great text-based online forum. People type in to Reddit an estimated 50,000 words every minute, which is just remarkable. Of course, it does host videos and photos now as well. But you know, it's just these kind of massive communities of people, and it's almost shocking to me because it's 12, 13 years old now and has sort of grown up with the other social networking sites. And it's sort of shocking to me when people say, oh, I never use Reddit, or I've never been to Reddit, because it's where a lot of the internet's culture actually comes from. It's sort of the bridge between the dark web, or what 4chan and 8chan sort of used to be, and the bright, shiny, you know, Pinterest-ready internet.
And it's interesting to me because, again, it's what the internet is all about, is finding, as Seth Godin would say, your own tribe. Whatever specific niche interests you have, you can find a group of people that are amazingly interested in the exact same thing.
Yes. Even if your thing is photographing chairs underwater or, you know, bread.
I love that.
Trees. I know. One community that I found that I really liked was called r/blep, B-L-E-P. Do you know what a blep is?
I don't.
It's when a cat is sticking out its tongue just a little bit. It's not a lick. It's not a yawn. It's just a blep.
So why? So if we want to visualize what Reddit is, it's just basically mostly text, just a stream of conversation, right?
Right. And so for most of for the last decade, you know, Reddit has basically looked like the internet from 2005. It has been just a list of links, a list of posts. And one time Bloomberg Business Week referred to the aesthetic of Reddit as having all the aesthetic seduction of a phone book. So, you know, it was something that had a steep learning curve to kind of get involved. And I think that's why, you know, the programmers and young men who are super interested in technology sort of became its first audience. And, you know, it sort of grew from there. But because it has that steep learning curve, I think that's why folks like yourself maybe never got into it. It's hard to find your home there.
So we hear a lot today about how Facebook did this and Twitter did this, and they've been brought before Congress. Where's Reddit? Why isn't Reddit part of this conversation, at least on the same scale as some of the major social media players?
Yeah, well, you know, it's fascinating to me because, you know, Reddit was grappling with all of these same issues that Facebook, Twitter, Google have dealt with over the past couple of years, but it was dealing with them even earlier. Reddit, during its sort of middle years of growth, became sort of known as the free speech site on the internet, and Reddit users love nothing more than kind of pushing Reddit's limits and testing what are the boundaries, if any, of what we can say, what we can do. And so, you know, basically there were so many dark corners of Reddit at one point in the company's life that the company itself almost imploded over a series of scandals. It went through three CEOs in like 10 months. And, you know, that kind of caused so much tumult that the original founders, Steve Huffman and Alexis Ohanian, decided we need to step back in here. This thing has gotten completely out of hand. So, you know, Steve came back as CEO less than 3 years ago and began really cleaning up the site and trying to figure out we need to make more limits. Let's actually set some boundaries here. Let's ban harassment. Let's ban, you know, certain violent depictions of violence. And, you know, he began a cleanup that became, I think, instructive to the rest of the internet. You know, Reddit banned revenge porn. I'm not sure if you know what that is.
Of course, yes. I'm married. Yeah. I don't practice that.
But before Facebook and Twitter really formalized those policies, and, you know, it was becoming California law, there was some traction there already, but Reddit banned that very early on. So, I mean, I would love to see Steve Huffman testify before Congress and be part of this conversation. It is a bigger platform than Twitter, so therefore, I mean, it really should be part of what our lawmakers and policymakers are looking at. I also think Reddit is fairly transparent for being a privately held company. I mean, it's not public like Facebook. There may be more limits to how it can be regulated, you know, it's funny, during the you know, when Mark Zuckerberg was called to testify this last spring, Reddit was part of the discussion. It was something that academics had mentioned to the congressional committee that they should be looking into. And Reddit's representatives told me, well, we never heard from Congress. We had to call them up ourselves and say, hi, we're Reddit. Do you want to talk to us? I mean, that's how little it is on the radar of the folks who are potentially, you know, making new regulations for how we communicate online and what kind of news gets put in front of our faces.
But did they not get called because, I mean, I don't know, what is their revenue model? And it's maybe they didn't get involved so much in the political election of 2016.
Well, right. I think it's easy for Congress members to understand the flow of money online, though it may be more difficult to understand just peer-to-peer communications, right? And you can regulate the flow of money far more easily than you can conversations. And Reddit is an ad-based platform and system, and it is trying to make money. It does, you know, when you go to Reddit, you will see ads. It is doing much, much better than it has in the past in terms of revenue. They're still not disclosing specific revenues, and it is it's a weird setup as a company. You know, it was acquired by Condé Nast just a year into its life and has since been spun out to be sort of owned by Advanced Publications, but able to accept venture capital like a startup. So it is operating like a kind of typical Silicon Valley startup right now. It has lots of venture capital funding and is valued at more than $1 billion. So I would say, you know, Reddit is sort of on that IPO looking path. It's probably, if I have to look into a crystal ball, I would say probably will raise more money before it becomes really, really profitable and could embark on that path.
So part of this book is interviews with the founders, you know, Steve and Alexis. What did you learn about them and how it shaped the future of Reddit?
Yeah, I mean, they have such a fascinating relationship. They are completely different people who happen to sort of see the world through the same lens and therefore get along when they were college students. Alexis is, you know, sort of charismatic and gregarious and super social. And Steve back in the day was just sort of your typical, like, snarky programmer, you know, with a quick sense of humor, but not always the easiest guy to get along with. And, you know, I've watched them sort of grow into men over the last more than decade. And I've also watched their friendship fracture and crack several times. And that provided just such an interesting personal story of starting a company and the struggles of growing it and the toll that, you know, a friendship and a business intertwined can take on a person. So that's been just absolutely fascinating to watch. And I think, you know, helped give the narrative of a really rich and deep kind of human feeling as well.
So, Christine, what has been their review of the book, We Are the Nerds?
This is so interesting. You know, I don't entirely know, of course, but I did hear a little bit from Steve Huffman. I spoke with him at a conference a couple of weeks after the book came out, and you know, he was still a little nervous to read the whole thing. But his girlfriend had read it, and you know, he found her like sort of laughing and at certain parts, and he basically said to me, like, from what I've read, you know, basically, like, when I read news about Reddit, when I read stories about Reddit in general, I really never come away thinking, well, that's pretty close to what happened. That's pretty good telling. He said, but with my book, that was his feeling. You know, he read certain scenes and said, yep, that's what happened.
You can imagine that conversation that goes on between him and his girlfriend, like, oh, no, you should read it. No, I just can't read it. You got to read it for me. Because
yeah,
I just, you know, you read this letter first. You tell me what it says because I just can't deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a scary thing to open yourself and your life story up to a writer and you know, trust them with that. But, you know, it is also sort of a semi-investigative look at the company Reddit and its growth. And there were a lot of scandals, a lot of really sort of damning stuff in there. And Reddit is still in the midst of a struggle to kind of clean up its site. It has had Russian influence on the site over the past couple of years. Even recently, in recent months, there was another case of some propagandists on the site. So they have a hard road ahead of them, and they are, you know, it's lucky that Steve Huffman is willing to admit that.
So, you know, a lot of small business owners are looking for ways to market their business or to target people that are their prospects or could be their customers. Does Reddit have a role in small business?
Sure. Well, there are plenty of small business communities on Reddit. I think there's communities for entrepreneurs, and there's lots of particularly like niche. If you're starting a beer brewery, there's lots of places that you can find your audience and your customers on Reddit. The thing about Reddit is it's very anti-self-promotion, which makes it a difficult place to start that conversation. Now, certain brands have had great luck with it. Certain kind of fashion companies just dive right into streetwear like communities and start chatting with their fans and being really genuine and open and having sort of a human voice is key to kind of mastering Reddit. You know, consider that it's anti-promotion and it's sort of the antithesis of the very airbrushed influencer heavy, you know, Instagram and Pinterest internet. It's people, you know, really sharing their genuine thoughts, and they don't like to feel like they're being marketed to. They want to feel like they're actually having a conversation. You know, I think some brands have done kind of giveaways or freebies, but right, with a sense of humor. There's also very clever. Reddit's very, very funny, you know, and it's a place where if your brand has an identity that has a little bit of edge to it, that could go over really well.
But it's also not a bad place to start, because what I tell small business owners is that the way that selling or marketing happens today is that you've got to showcase your expertise and help other people and for them to think about you when they're ready to buy. And this whole non-commercial thing could be a good place to start.
Absolutely. And I mean, look at the rest of the social marketplace right now. I mean, Twitter is seeming to draw less traffic and traction to brands. Facebook is becoming a far more difficult place to advertise for small businesses, especially the smallest businesses are having a lot more trouble getting traction there. So in the age of diversifying your sort of online footprint, I would say sure. Yeah, it's a good place.
All right. Well, you've convinced me. I got to check it out seriously now.
Yeah. What's your like favorite personal hobby? Is there?
I'm a cyclist.
There you go. There you go.
I'm a cyclist and a karate guy. So those are my two hobbies.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm sure, well, there's communities there.
I'm
and
sure
then,
there
know,
is.
Dive into the small business stuff too.
I'm sure there's. And what are your feeds?
Oh, you know, I look at a little bit of everything. I try to stay up on what the political subreddits are doing there. Like I mentioned, I do like some of the cat subreddits. There's also a great one called 2X Chromosomes, which is a community for women.
Well, Christine, thanks for being on the show. The title of the book is called We Are the Nerds, the birth and Tumultuous Life of Reddit, the Internet's Cultural Laboratory. And I have now said tumultuous twice in the same broadcast, so
yes.
I actually got it right. Where can people get in touch with you?
I can be found on Twitter at Ligorio is my handle. My website is ChristineLigorio.com, and you can buy this book anywhere you buy books, online or at your favorite like small local bookstore.
Christine, thanks so much. This is AM 820 WCPT. We'll be right back. I know a lot of small business owners are confused about where to advertise online and how to actually get results. You gotta be diligent because you can lose a lot of money fast if you don't choose the right platform and the right audience. The question I always get is, should I advertise on a search engine like Google or a social media platform like LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter? For small business owners, LinkedIn is the place to drive brand awareness, generate leads, and build long-term, purposeful relationships that result in boosting their business. This is because effective search engine advertising should target audiences, not keywords. LinkedIn's network has more than 575 members, and their advertising gives you the ability to effectively target the right message to the right people while they're working. It has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, down to their job title, company name, and industry. In fact, 4 out of 5 customers who are on LinkedIn are decision makers at their company, so you're building relationships with the people that really matter. This will result in higher quality leads and more website traffic. So to redeem a $100 free LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, please use this website for listeners of Small Business Radio Show. You got to go to linkedin.com/SBR. That's linkedin.com/SBR for your free $100 ad credit. Remember that terms and conditions apply. Let me know about your results.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe more life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry, since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in, and existing customers are fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun, and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out BarryMoltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series. That's BarryMoltz, MOLTZ.com/unstuck.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Welcome back. I'm going to say one word to you. The word is e-commerce. And I know just that word sends shivers down the spine of most small business owners. They know they have to do it, but they're uncertain how to do it well. Well, that changes today as we welcome John Lawson to the show. John is the Amazon number one best-selling author, IBM e-commerce futurist, and eBay influencer. He's regarded as a platinum e-commerce power seller who has generated millions through online selling. John's the CEO of Colder Ice Media. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Barry.
So e-commerce just scares me because I know I have to do it, but I feel like I can't do it as well as Amazon. And I think that a lot of small business owners feel the same way. What should they do or where should they start?
They need to change their paradigm. They need to shift their thinking. Amazon is not your competitor. That is like being in Little League and thinking that an NFL player is somebody you need to compete with. You're not even in the same stadium. You're not in the same league. You can't even get a ticket to their game. And that's the important part, because you walk in there feeling totally defeated and totally overwhelmed. You want to play in the realm where you're at. So you want to think about, who is my direct competitor right now? It could be the store across the street from me. So how can I use electronic, that's the E part, right? Commerce, which is being able to generate some sales and marketing for your product. How can I use tools that are available to me to outdo my competitor that is right across the street from me? And that makes the opportunity seem so much easier and less overwhelming.
But John, doesn't everyone compare their e-commerce experience or want the e-commerce experience to the best one they've ever had, which is probably Amazon? So they're expecting everyone to live up to that?
I think so, absolutely. I think you want to look at Amazon as a leader whom you can learn from, as opposed to just trying to compete with, right? So if Amazon is able to do some fast delivery, well, you realize, hey, I live right in their neighborhood. Maybe there's an opportunity for me to make it more convenient for my customers to get that product, whether it is being able to order it online and just pick it up when at their convenience when they're on their way home from work or from, you know, shopping elsewhere. That can be something that you can do. So, I mean, you just kind of want to look at the opportunities that are available to you where you're at, that you're learning from some of the big industries like Amazon. Sure.
So, John, what do you think the table stakes are? What do you have to do well if you're going to do e-commerce at all as a small business owner?
I think you're going to have to be able to really deliver a good experience. So what I mean by that is you don't want to jump in and say, well, Amazon's doing X, I need to do X also, when you probably or you might not actually have the capacity to do that. So it's better that you not offer, you know, home delivery if you really can't get it to people's home, right? So I think you got to be realistic about what you can and can't do and what you should and should do.
So what's the key, John, what's the key place to start? Do I start with, all right, what shopping cart technology I'm going to use, or how do I actually plan for that great experience?
So let's say you are looking at getting online. One of the things I kind of like doing and starting with are our major sellers, right? So you don't have to put your entire inventory online, right? If you've got a set of items that are, man, these things are really selling, very popular. I'm one of the only people that have it either in the area or I can very well compete price-wise with others in the online space, then start right there. Start with a smaller, you know, SKU packaging than your entire store level, all right? Then you want to definitely look at solutions. There are a lot of different solutions. There's, you know, Shopify is the most well-known, but there are a lot of other smaller solutions, solutions that are made specifically for SMB brick and mortars to move inventory from one to the other. You want to think about good photography and good descriptions. Those are the most important things. And of course, having great policies for people, if it's, you know, items that they wear or they want to try out first, have good return policies.
So do you feel that when someone gets online, I think it's very interesting that you say, John, that they should do their top selling products. I remember when I was in the direct mail industry and we try to build a list, we would advertise just the top one or two selling products just so mm-hmm. we get customers interested, and then we would expand. And it seems like that principle still holds true online.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, good business practice is good business practice, whether online, offline, you know, direct mail, all of that kind of stuff. You want to kind of get your feet wet a little bit. see how it's working, learn the, you know, ins and outs and the ropes before you go wide and all of a sudden you realize this is not for you.
So does it make sense to have your own website to do this, or should you get on one of the marketplaces like Amazon or eBay or Alibaba where there are already people there?
I kind of, you know, it depends on how comfortable you are with the whole thing. When you're on a marketplace, what you're really doing is you're paying them a percentage of all your sales simply for getting your products in front of their customers, and they've got a huge customer base. So it's a good way to get your feet wet and test and see if it's for you before you spend all the money to go and build out your own or carve out your own space with your own store. But I think at this point now, you do have to recognize that if you just put it up, people are not going to come.
Right, right.
So you're going to have to learn or get people engaged with you on the marketing aspect if you do it yourself. If you don't do it yourself and you use the marketplace, then realize you're going to be giving up a good, you know, chunk of the money just for them to help you market your product.
And we have to realize that you are not Kevin Costner, right? Just because you build it doesn't mean they're going to come.
No, absolutely. That's probably the most important thing to recognize. And it's a, you know what? It's a long-term play. It's not a short-term play. I mean, if you're like, hey, let's put up a store today because Christmas is in 2 weeks, that might not necessarily work out for you.
Well, it works the same way. If you're going to open up a brick-and-mortar store, just because you have your opening day event doesn't mean people are going to come. But this now is holiday season, and a lot of small business owners depend on the holidays to really make or break their year. What kinds of things should we be practicing during the holiday season?
Social media. I can't emphasize social commerce enough. This is a good time to deal with possibly some advertising in the social space just to see if you can get some traction right now with gift shoppers. It's pretty low cost to start doing little things in your local area around a Facebook advertising or Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever it is on these social platforms that you can possibly get into over the next 2 weeks. And if you have the ability to either let them order online and pick up in store or order online and ship, then you have an opportunity right now to maybe get some traction.
And then, so why is a social commerce so important? That's people shopping for things on the various social platforms.
It's right now, I don't think people really go to the platform to shop at all, right? I mean, I don't log into Facebook to say, oh, I'm going to go shop on Facebook. But every once in a while I'm doing my talking and I see a really good gift item or I see something that really resonates with what I'm interested in, I might be inclined to click that link.
Also, it depends on what else people are recommending, what people are talking about, right?
Right.
And a lot of folks who are on social media, you know, they're with their friends, they're kind of in a happy mood, and it's probably much more conducive to shopping.
It can be, you know. I mean, because shopping definitely is pretty much a team sport. I mean, a lot of times we do want our opinions of others to tell us, hey, what was good, and give me some recommendations. And that's an opportunity that really does happen online. So you don't want to be all up in the face, right? Buy my stuff. But you do want to give them the opportunity, if they're looking for something or if they've been sparked by their discovery, that they can move forward and maybe get more information on your products and or purchase your products.
We're talking with John Lawson. He's the CEO of Colder Ice Media. We're talking about e-commerce. One of the terms you mentioned before was advertising on these social media platforms. And I always get nervous when people talk about digital marketing because I feel that it's something we need to do, but I also feel like it's the quickest way to lose $500.
It sure is.
Forget about the casinos, John.
Is.
Forget about the casinos, right? You could lose it here much quicker.
You know, I tell people that you really start with a very small budget. If I can make $30, $30 is a good number for me, right? If I can make $30 over the course of 3 days, so that's $100 basically, right? If I can make $30 a day, turn into at least $30 in income or at least $30 in profits, then I might have a winner there. But if you are, I, I really believe is that advertising has to pay for itself. So you spend money up front to seed and learn how to optimize, and then you let the ad run. So over the first 3 to 5 days, we will put a small budget behind it and try to find the audience. Because what you have to do online is here's the deal people don't really realize. It's not necessarily about the customer. It's really about the robot AI that you have to train. You have to train the robot to understand the audience that will actually click on the ad and or purchase.
So, John, what does that mean? I mean, I know a robot like Alexa or Siri, because they're both my very good friends.
They're your friends, right?
They pay me compliments. When I ask them to pay me a compliment, John, I go, pay me a compliment. And you know something? Alexa pays me a compliment much more than my wife ever does. So I like Alexa. So what's a robot? Well, how do you train the robot?
So basically what happens is that the more people that click on an ad, the more money the advertiser platform will make, right? So there's a robot in the background, an artificial intelligence that learns, hey, this guy clicked on the ad. Let's find other people that are similar to this guy and show the ad. And so over time, it learns what is the best audience for your ad to serve to. See? So you have to kind of feed it in the front so that it gets its learning together. And then it will be more optimized to serve that ad to only those people. Each of us only really get one ad in our timeline in Facebook. When you go into Facebook, you get the post at the top that's usually from a friend. The next thing you see is an ad. It's one single ad. And Facebook's job and their AI's job is to figure out what's the best ad to show you as an individual that will make you click.
So I just want to make it clear to the people that are listening, when you're on the social media platforms, you're choosing an audience, not keywords. And so once you choose the audience, then the AI robot, that's where they start. And then they base what they show in the future on how people click as you go forward.
Absolutely. And the more you do it, the better it becomes. The cheaper it becomes, the more conversions you get, but it takes a little bit of time.
So, John, the last question I wanted to ask you is, what do you see coming down the line for e-commerce? Because, you know, we've been talking about e-commerce since the late 90s and certainly has evolved to many different things. I mean, Black Friday quite isn't Black Friday like it used to be anymore because of e-commerce. And thank God for that.
Yeah,
although I miss the things where the people are like grabbing those big television sets, you know, and fighting over on, you know, at 12 midnight. I just love that stuff. That's like capitalism at its best. Who can get to carry out the biggest big screen TV?
It was a smackdown.
Exactly. It was like Filene's basement every day.
But you know what? Here's the thing. I'm gonna set some myths to arrest right now. E-commerce at its best is 10% of all commerce. That means 90% of all commerce actually happens offline. All right. So that's the first thing. Why don't we see the Black Fridays that we used to see? Because people got hip to the game and they started doing Black Friday week.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got people doing deals all week long. Some start the Christmas shopping season and sales season at the beginning of November now. So what has happened is all the deals now are going throughout this entire cycle from Halloween all the way until Christmas. So there's not the big rush for Black Friday anymore because a lot of us have already done some of our shopping and a lot of the sales have already been going on. And then, of course, we know Cyber Monday's coming right after that. So it's kind of the holiday that used to be one day has been distributed to multiple days. That's part of the reason you're not seeing the big Black Fridays that you have seen in the past. Of course, yes, e-commerce has taken a chunk out of that and they continue to take a chunk because the holiday shopping experience can be a trying one, and being able to do that at your computer without having to go and fight, that has a lot to do with it as well.
Well, listen, next year when I have you back, you know, we've got, you know, Thanksgiving, we got Black Friday, we got Small Business Saturday, Sunday you go to church, right? We have Cyber Monday, we have Giving Tuesday. We got to come up with some name for Wednesday.
Ah, we need a day for Wednesday.
We need a day for Wednesday.
That's an opportunity.
So, John, thanks so much for being on the show. Where can people learn more from you and get in touch with you?
Just my website, johnlawson.com. Just go there and you can find me.
All right, John, have a Merry Christmas.
You too, sir.
All right, this is AM 820 WCPT. We'll be right back. Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both the employee and the government insist that you get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government agencies on a regular basis, and if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. So this is one thing you gotta stop worrying about. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It's fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There is flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So go ahead, search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes or Google Play app stores to download this app, or visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
With Barry's 25 years in small business, he has finally discovered the magic formula to make more profit at any company. Business gurus make it seem so complicated, but it is really simple. The formula is P times P equals P, where people multiplied by process means more profit. Learn how you can take a quantum leap in just 180 days to grow the profit in your business. Contact Barry at Moltz.com.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, in business, you only get one chance to actually make a first impression. This is why the initial greeting is so important. And the best way to learn this is from folks that actually do it for a living, which is the hospitality industry. Dan Sachs, a professor of DePaul University School of Hospitality Leadership, and is the entrepreneur in residence at DePaul's Coleman Entrepreneurship Center. Dan, of course, the founder and owner of Bin 36 Restaurant and Wine Brand. After successfully opening his first restaurant in 1999, the Wine Brand was established in 2005. Dan's knowledge of food, wine, and restaurant operations has been recognized nationally, has been featured speaker for the nation's Restaurant News, the National Restaurant Association, Food and Wine Magazine, as well as many other Chicago events. He just came out with a new book. It's called The Million Dollar Greeting. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So I always want to talk to people in the hospitality industry because, me being a pretty tough customer, I think you guys have a really difficult job, especially in making a great impression when a customer first walks in.
Yeah, I think it's one of the big challenges of the business, especially one where you have to be on all the time. Because for you, for example, when you walk in, it's your first time, even though the restaurateur might have been there for 3, 4, or 5 hours. So connecting with individuals and not treating them like they're just another warm body to fill a seat is a tough job, but that is the job.
And, you know, and every interaction is so important during your entire stay or your entire meal. I mean, I tell a story a lot where I'm in a hotel and I'm waiting for the elevator and I'm on my smartphone and I didn't realize that my elevator had arrived, and the woman that was cleaning the floor said, "Excuse me, sir, your elevator's here." And to me, that made a huge difference. It wasn't her job to do that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But that's the name of the game in hospitality, and I think in business in general, is recognizing that it's your role, regardless of your position, to connect directly with the customers, because they're the ones that are paying the bills at the end of the day. And I think we all want recognition, you know, regardless of what we're doing or where we are. Being acknowledged for as a customer and appreciated as one makes a big difference, whether we're staying in a hotel or we're shopping for a screwdriver at a hardware store.
So is that really the key, Dan, to the million-dollar greeting? Is the first thing acknowledgement when you actually encounter the customer?
I think it's one part. It's really how you think about your business as a whole and how you set yourself up for success with your employees, especially if you're a small business owner or leader of a company. It's creating an environment where your employees really feel like they are owners and part of the business in a way where they will go the extra mile for the customer. So it's not necessarily so specific when you think about how employees react, but it's how you create an environment, a culture within the business that makes it easy and obvious for employees to make those kinds of important connections.
So how do you do that? Because I think what you talked about there, Dan, is really every owner's dream is they want the employees to feel like they've got some stake in this business.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, it's never easy. Because when you're running your own business, you know, it's not only a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, on-your-mind, all-the-time kind of operation, but there are lots of pressing, immediate issues that need to be taken care of every day just to keep the business up and running. But if you sort of bank on some real basic traits, some basic tools, I think that you can start to build a culture around the kind of accountability that employees can feel for customers. And that, of course, is about how you as a leader portray yourself and being somebody who, first of all, lays out a clear idea of what you expect from your employees in terms of how they interact. And so being clear about that is important, but also creating a culture and nurturing a culture in your company where people feel respected and appreciated will in turn give them the feeling that they'll pass that on to your customers. And that's really important. And I think leaders who are accountable to that, business owners who understand that and are accountable to their employees in that respect and treat them with respect, generally get that back tenfold, not just from their employees in their relationships, but in the way they think about the customers as well.
So I just want to highlight something you said, because I think it's so important. What you described was the way that you treat your team, your employees, will be reflected on how they treat your and their customers.
100%. I think that's sort of a tried and true method. It's something, though, that we easily forget in the just rush and craziness of everyday operating our businesses, because there are lots of distractions, lots of crises, lots of immediate problems that need solved. And sometimes it makes it hard to stop for a minute and lift your head up and say thank you to your employees. But of course, you know, that makes a huge difference when it comes time for the employees to then make a decision about what's in the best interest of the customer.
So what's the safety valve, Dan, for that? Because I agree with you. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, you kind of forget because of all the stress. What has been the safety valve for you to say, oh, nope, I got to stop and I got to really step back and I have to really change the way that I'm treating the employees?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me and my experience running my restaurant, and I wasn't always great at it. So I acknowledge that it's tough, but it's about, I think it's really about accountability and setting a standard early on about what's acceptable and what's not, and then holding yourself accountable to behaving towards your employees in a way that you would want them to behave towards you. And it sort of goes back to the golden rule, right? You know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I think that mantra really speaks to customer service generally. Again, we look to hospitality because that's the most obvious place where people think about customer service. But the truth is that it exists all around us in all kinds of businesses. It's the holiday season now, and people are out in stores and shopping, and being able to deliver great service really is an opportunity to differentiate yourself as a retailer or any kind of provider. And so establishing those kinds of norms within the business and how you relate to your employees every day, I think translates significantly to how customers experience your business.
So at the time of this year, you say you have to try, it's a good time to differentiate yourself. How do you do it at Bin 36 at your own restaurant in Chicago?
You know, I think we try to be very present. It's when things get busy, it's easy to go formulaic. You know, you're there so many hours of the day, and you're just trying to get through and make sure that you're able to cross the T's and dot the I's. But the truth is that in the moment, in that moment, if you're present and you can actually treat each customer as an individual customer and sort of look them in the eye and acknowledge them for the fact that they've made the choice to come to your business, My experience is that makes a big difference in terms of how people connect with your business, how they remember you, and ultimately become loyal customers. And loyal customers, we all know, are the best customers. They're the easiest to hold on to and the most profitable ones. And so the ones we really want to make sure we take good care of.
You know, I was in New York yesterday and I was listening to a hotel chain in Spain present, and they had this slogan that said, you know, guests come and go, but fans always come back, which I really liked a lot.
Absolutely, yeah. Loyalty is the golden chalice of customer service, and so when you can establish that kind of commitment from your customers, it's worth every investment to make sure that they feel the kind of connection that you want them to. There's no doubt about it.
And with social media now, Dan, that even amplifies that you really have to do a good job, because when you don't, a lot of folks are the next minute they're going to be on social media saying something about it.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, I think of social media. Somebody asked me that same question yesterday, and I think it's as much as it's sort of a double-edged sword, but it's a great opportunity. If you think of social media as a way to get good intel on your business, mm-hmm. You know, you can really leverage that in a way that we never could in the past to make improvements. And that's, you know, part of being a good leader is maybe leaving your ego at the door a little bit and recognizing that you don't do everything right and that you got to change and improve and evolve. And if you are resistant to what the comments are on social media or resentful of them, you know, it's probably going to be tough for you to make the kinds of changes you need to make for your customers to really appreciate the kind of a good quality experience they could have.
Yeah, I love the use of the word, Dan, good intel, because that's what you should really look at it as. It's not personal. As my wife always says, it's not all about me, right? They had a bad experience. Sometimes that happens. And I think that what customers look for is not necessarily that they had a bad experience, but how do you respond when they did have a bad experience? So do you respond on social media? Do you try to make it right? Because not everyone's going to have a perfect night.
There's no doubt. And the truth is, it's hard work. You know, it's hard to be on all the time. It's hard to make the right decision every day. And a lot of times, even great service providers make mistakes. And it's how you recover, like you said, and acknowledge your mistake. I think what, at least from a statistical standpoint, the biggest and most important thing people want is an acknowledgement that you screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, that's all I'm asking for my kids. You know, just tell me, you know, you made a mistake and, you know, we can work through it. And I think customers feel that way on a regular basis, is that if you can simply say, you know what, I'm sorry, we didn't hit the mark this time. Let's try to fix it and make it better. I think that can win you a ton of points and really give you an advantage in the service game overall.
Now, I have a favorite Thai restaurant that's across the street from my apartment building, and I was in the other day getting a takeout order, and the owner is arguing with one of the customers about what was in the bag and what wasn't in the bag for the takeout. And I'm thinking to myself, just give her some more rice, right? It's not worth it. It's not like she comes in every day and says that her order is wrong.
Absolutely. And again, you know, the reason we get into a business of our own and we take that entrepreneurial leap is because we have, you know, a great idea, and we have a lot of pride in what we do, and with that comes our ego, and a lot of times that gets in the way of making smart decisions about how to solve customer problems. And when we exhibit that as leaders, then of course, you know, naturally that filters down, and our employees do the same thing, and they feel defensive, when the truth is, you know, we just want to try to create a great experience for the customer, and the best way to do that is to, as I said, to sort of leave our ego at the door a little bit and be willing to acknowledge our own failings at times.
I love you use the word that one of the keys in this whole thing is being present, because, you know, we all have that difficulty with things that are coming at us all the time. But I think especially in hospitality, I see that one of the most things that really gets in the way of being present is service staff using their smartphones, right? And so many times, Dan, I'll go into a retail store and the person at the register will be using their smartphone, and I'll walk up to them and I'll say, oh, am I interrupting you, right? What should the role be of smartphones in a service-oriented business?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, obviously you're not going to get away from them, but it's about establishing acceptable norms. And I think when you see that a lot of times, I think that's probably because the manager or the boss is doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people, in my experience, appreciate structure and appreciate rules and regulations. They know what the name of the game is and how to play. And so when you're clear as a leader about what's acceptable and what's not, and are willing to walk that talk, I think employees generally fall in line. And that's certainly been our experience in running the restaurants, is that when we are disciplined about being present, then employees tend to be more disciplined about being present. And when you catch them not following that rule, that process, then you make sure it's clear that that's not acceptable. And then you can ultimately build a culture where people recognize that the number one priority is the customer.
So Dan, what are your guidelines about people in your restaurant using smartphones, the staff?
They don't.
So if they have a free moment,
guideline.
if they have free moment, the server's not pulling out their smartphone and getting on their smartphone.
Not in my site, at least. It's pretty clear to them that that's not part of the game. And I think that's actually served us very well over the years, is understanding that, you know, there are certain things that aren't acceptable and certain things that are. I remember a story a long time ago, it's a very involved story, but at the end of it, it involved an attorney and some issues in one of the restaurants I owned. And the attorney turned to me at the end of the conversation and says, "You know, Dan, the cemetery is full of indispensable people." Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a minute. It took me a minute to sort of connect what he was saying. But what he was really trying to tell me is that, you know, sometimes when people don't follow the rules, you have to draw the line. And those people can't be part of the organization because they bring the whole organization down, no matter how important you think they might be. They aren't necessarily the ones that are really in the long run helping you out. So we've always tried to be pretty clear and fair about what the rules of do's and don'ts are. And when people don't follow along, we sort of fall back on that mantra and make decisions about hiring and letting people go when we want to make sure that our customers are the number one priority. And so it's a tough lesson to learn, but one I've learned over the years that seems to have worked pretty well for me.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you being on the show. Where can people get a copy of The Million Dollar Greeting and learn more about you?
Wherever fine books are sold.
There you go.
Like Amazon. And you can go to themilliondollargreeting.com to find out more about it.
Dan, thanks for being on the show. And I want to thank everyone to listening to this week's radio show. And I want to thank our sponsor, Nextiva, the all-in-one communication solution for small business. I also want to thank our booking producer, Sarah Schaffrin, our in-studio producer, Lady B, our marketing manager, Courtney Gilchrist. If 2019 is the year that you're finally going to get unstuck, where you've decided that you want to earn the kind of money that you think you deserve, you got to give me a call, 773-837-8250, or you can email me at barry@maltz.com. Remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry Maltz on the web at barrymaltz.com or more episodes of Small Business Radio at smallbizradioshow.com.